thing to remember is that it's happening everywhere, people. It's not just happening to you. It isn't just your seams that are getting unsprung. It's just happening everywhere. We have here a note, for example. In fact, it includes a picture. A picture of an owl. You remember the terrible story of the chicken up in Maine that was laying the empty eggs, huh? And the beaver that got knocked over by his own tree? You remember that? Well, it's happening everywhere. And if you think it stops with that, listen to this. If you think things are wild over there on the east side in the 50s along Lexington Avenue, ho, 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 ho. Owlie Bird, who for 2 years lived in male disguise with Llewellyn Bucks in Daytona Beach, Florida, last week laid this large egg, to the surprise of everyone. Owlie Bird was found during Hurricane Donna. So a brief pause while we consult with all those fluffy little fuzzy sweaters, and we look out there at all of those funny little blousies, and you just have to realize that it's not only, you know, chickens that are laying empty eggs. Roses of Picardy. All together. In a little Spanish town, was on a night like this. Oh, it's just happening everywhere. Well, of course, I don't have to tell you anything about in a little Spanish town, 'twas on a night like this. I have to say, by way of superfluous explanation, that piece of music, as horrible as it is, and as uncontrollably romantic as it is, and as unbelievably unbelievable as it is, it plays a somewhat interesting role in my past existence. Oh, yes, I cannot look into your old eyeball and say, that's my song. Not a bit of it. Except I will tell you this, that my Uncle Tom, my bootlegger uncle, for some nutty reason, was hung on in a little Spanish town that was on a night like this. He also, for some nutty reason, unfathomable even to this day to me, collected pictures of World War I guys. He did, just pictures of soldiers with leggings and wrappings and stuff. And when I'm this little kid, I'm about a year and a half, maybe two and a half, maybe 5.5 years old, we would come over to visit him living in his stucco house with his gigantic dog named King. Yes, and he would play on the piano. He had a gigantic dog that had phosphorescent fangs and was a direct descendant of the Hound of the Baskerville. Oh, it was fantastic. At that point, I did not realize he was a bootlegger. I just thought he was my rich uncle. And he had this dog that was 17 feet high. And apparently it was for guys who were interested in his business, you know. I didn't know that. I just thought it was a dog. All I knew was that it was the only dog I had ever known where everybody in the family was forbidden to get closer than 30 feet from him. He was a people-eating dog, and that meant all people, including Uncle Tom. Well, he had this dog. Yes, that's right. He had this dog out in the backyard, and he had a chicken wire fence, one of those, not really chicken wire, but the kind of wire, you know, the kind of fence that they have around tennis courts. He had a fence that was 20 feet high. Never saw it outside of a tennis court. It went around his whole backyard, see? And at the top of it, it had barbed wire. Well, now, it was for two purposes. One was to keep King in and to keep King's customers out. Well, King used to parade around in that backyard. We never went through the back, you see. We always would come there. We'd park the car in the driveway, walk around the front. And the instant the car would stop, you'd hear, oh, 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 this insane nut is running up and down, grabbing a hold of the wire and rattling it. I've never seen a dog who could grab wire. Oh, ow, ow. Well, right away, you know, we're up in the living room there, and you could hear King subsiding like a gigantic hurricane out in the backyard. And once in a while, he'd hurl himself right up against the brick wall of this house, the stucco wall. You'd hear. That's King out there in the backyard. Well, once in a great while, King would take one of his famous running leaps. King would get driven to the point, you know, that all people get driven to, and he would go way at the end of the yard and run the entire length of the yard and take off. King was the only flying dog I've ever known. He didn't jump, he flew like a squirrel. King would take off, and 30 feet in the air, you'd see him going with claws outstretched, phosphorescent fangs open, wide open, and 18 mailmen making for Western Avenue like a covey of ducks. Well, of course, then there was a three-day hunt while they were corralling King with elephant rifles and stuff. Oh, it was a fantastic mutt. Well, that was Uncle Tom. He had a strange attitude, though, Uncle Tom was. In addition to having King and all the pictures... Oh, I didn't tell you that all the pictures that Uncle Tom had of guys from World War I were pictures of dead guys. Yeah, they'd all been shot, you know. It says things like view of battlefield at Ypres. Immediately after a gigantic shell barrage. And you see all these guys laying around. And King would show me the pictures, or Uncle Tom. See, they're intertwined. It's a thing there, you know, King and Uncle Tom all together there. Uncle Tom would show me the pictures, and then me and my kid brother, you know, he'd say, why don't you look at the war pictures? And we're going to start a game of Pinochle. And he'd give us the war pictures, and while we're looking at the war pictures, he would sit down in the dining room at their upright piano that was carved in the form of 14 griffins. You know those carved pianos with the dark wood and the griffins are holding up the top of the piano with the great big claws on the bottom? He would sit at the piano and 1, 2, 3. Now, I'd have to say this to you. Immediately, all of you old ladies are saying, why, that youngster must be my age. No. This is what made it so eerie. Uncle Tom was doing this in the heyday of The Music Goes Round and Round and Red Sails in the Sunset. Uncle Tom, somehow Uncle Tom was a throwback in some insane way. So The Music Goes Round and Round is what everybody else is doing. Uncle Tom. Hey, that's a great picture there. The one there where the guy got hit in the back. Look at that one. That's fantastic, hey? And out in the back, and Uncle Tom was selling his ginger ale all the while. And well, so, you know, you just can't escape reality with the owls laying the eggs there. I'm sure that there aren't more than 10 people out of there who wouldn't be scared right out of their BVDs in this crowd if you ran into an owl. Really, I don't know why people are so afraid of owls. No, really, seriously, an owl is a relatively sedate bird. No, they're not. There's some owls that are only as big as your fist. Little owls. Oh, they're very interesting little birds. Yes. Oh, they're tiny owls. Little owls. They're very cute. Yeah. But seriously, a man who collects owls is looked upon as a nut. But somebody who collects parakeets, which is a truly nutty bird, is looked upon as a nice little old person from Staten Island. That's the truth. I mean, I happen to know a guy. I've known several guys. In fact, I knew one guy out in Cincinnati who got hung on vultures, collected vultures, yes. And he had 4 or 5 vultures down in his basement. They were all 7.5 feet tall, and they dripped. But nevertheless, he collected them. And he loved each one of those vultures, that's true. And once in a while, he'd throw a dead cat down in the basement, you know. People get hung on all kinds of things. I don't know why you're looking at me and saying, I'm in bad taste. I'm describing the world. Don't you get that? It's the world. Ed, over there, the big one, the big one. Doing, 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 doing. It's the world we're talking about. Doing, 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 doing. I am not anti-large dogs with phosphorescent fangs. I am merely describing large dogs with phosphorescent fangs. By the way, I'll never forget the time King ate an entire basket of red, white, and blue Easter eggs. Doing, 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 doing. He liked eggs. Doing, 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 doing. Easter eggs. Doing, 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 doing. Ring, doing. Hold it there. Don't get mad at me. Everybody gets mad at me when I merely describe what is out there. They say, what is this nut talking about? What do you mean talking about? You know what I'm talking about. You've been there. Don't try to hide under the carpet, all of you. You've been there, just like me, just today. Today, do you know that I was forced, by unfortunate circumstances, to get rid of a very, very favorite cap? I am a non-hat wearer. Don't wear hats. Well, a couple of semesters ago, I was up in Toronto. And I'm walking along the street in Toronto, and it's raining, and it's cold and cruddy. And I see this cap in the window of this joint in Toronto. Well, unwittingly, I go in and I buy this crummy cap, merely because it was raining on the top of my head, so I bought this cap. Yeah, that's right, and everybody wears a cap in Toronto, so I bought a cap. Well, I came back, and I didn't wear the cap, you know, for a long time. Well, a few months ago, I put this crummy cap on the top of my head, and it's a great cap. I might point out that it is a very unusual cap, very, very unusual cap. First of all, it's 3.5 feet across. And it's got a very rakish sweep in the front, sort of like an ocean liner or something. It's got a recessive bill, holds back, and it makes me look like I'm walking against a heavy wind all the time and making it. You see, I'm really making it. So it gives me a rakish, I'll tell you what it makes me look like, cause sort of like a human radiator cap, the kind you see on Mercury, you know, leaning forward, all that stuff, very angry, you know, and it straightens out all the bumps and knobs on your head and everything, and it gives a nice dynamic look to you, you see, and it's also sort of forest green, which was the only color they had, so it was a great color, so I bought the cap. Well, I'm wearing this cap here about a month and a half or 2 months ago, and I noticed at about that time, and I didn't put two and two together, see, I noticed about that time that people stopped saying to me things that they always say to me, like, "You are a magnificent human being, Shepard. Those are really lovely, beautiful gentian blue eyes you have there." Or things like, "Say, you know, I never mentioned this to you, Shepard, but you have a fantastic cut to your jaw." You know, little things that I'm used to people saying, and they stopped saying. Well, I began to think, well, what is it? Is it too much bubble gum or too much hollering in the dark or something? Am I falling apart? What is this? Well, it wasn't until this afternoon that I realized that I was being upstaged by that crummy hat. Seriously. No longer were people looking at me. They were looking at this rotten hat. And for a month and a half, people are all saying, "What a magnificent hat you have, Shepard. That is a fantastic hat. What a magnificent, beautiful hat. What a great hat." Now, I discovered it this afternoon because of a series of circumstances. Ed Fitzgerald, who is really the other half of the Fitzgerald Pegeen team. You know, I don't know whether you people are aware of it, but Pegeen plays both parts on that show. And Pegeen, like most real artists, gets into the part. When she is Pegeen, she really is Pegeen. When she's Ed, she's really Ed. And you can tell when you're in the office which she is, you see, at any given moment. Well, she came tearing out of her office, and she was Ed at this moment, you know. And she's got her pipe going and everything, and she comes running across the office. Well, the first thing that Ed used to say to me was, "You're looking great, Shepard. Boy, oh boy, wow." He used to just say that. Well, the first thing he says was, "What a fantastic hat." Just like that. You know how you have those moments of revelation? I realized that it was the hat that people are looking at for the last month and a half. Well, I tested it then, see. I took the hat off, and I went up on the elevator, and I just sort of casually walked around the secretary pool. See, no hat. But I'm not there 30 seconds, and this chick says, "You know, Mr. Shepard, don't take me wrong, but, you know, you have a fantastic nose. Beautifully, it's a piece of pure sculpture. I just want to say that." Thank you, Lydia. George. Well, I figured it was because she was short and fat and had glasses and pimples that, you know, I wasn't going to just take this one thing. So I go a little bit further on, and I come to this other chick there, Sophie, see, and I sort of sneak up behind, and I casually walk around the other side of her IBM machine there, and I sort of bump into her coffee cup, and, you know, I'm not exactly fishing, but I'm letting her know I'm there, you know. I knock over the wastebasket, and oh, Mr. Shepard. Brief pause. She says, "Oh, Mr. Shepard, I hope you don't take me wrong, but has everyone told you ever that you have a lovely back of the head? The back of your head is just, it's beautiful, like mouse fur. It's lovely." Well, you know, I you don't say anything about it. So I turned and I said, "What was that, Sophie?" She said, "Well, you have a lovely back of the head. It's just so beautiful. It reminds me of, I live out in Teaneck, and I do a lot of bowling. And, well, it's just beautiful." And I said, well, Sophie, don't be embarrassed about saying things you really feel. I think that's one of the things wrong with people today. They don't say things they really feel. Baby, let's swing. Well, and, you know, so there was a little talk back and forth. Well, within 5 minutes, I was my old self. All of a sudden, my eyes were gleaming. You know, my chin was square. My stomach was flat, and I was walking up and down and ringing the elevators. Well, I get back into the office. I put that rotten hat on. I don't have that hat on. 30 seconds. Yeah, you guessed it. Little short, fat guys with cigars are looking at that rotten hat. Speaking of short, fat guys with cigars, this is WOR, AM and FM, New York. Well, I want to tell you something about being upstaged by your own costume. Now, for those of you out there who perhaps are not aware of this, but has it ever occurred to you that you're not making it because of that fantastic sport coat you got at Bonds? Now, most people believe it's the opposite. They get a great sport coat that everybody looks at. They buy, well, almost by transference, by juxtaposition, will also become fantastic. No, forget it. Forget it. No, no. What little you have is now completely lost in that magnificent Glenn Plaid. Absolutely gone. You see poor little chicks, you know, who come along and they're wearing this purple lamé gown, you know, with the neon things and the electric blue shoes, and they think they're making it because everybody's looking at their dress. They don't even see them. They don't even see the chick. It's that fantastic. Oh, yo, look at that thing there with the lights on it. Whew. And they don't even know what, you know, who's wearing it. Any old actor will tell you this. Be careful. Many a guy has been upstaged by his cowboy hat. You come onto the stage, you know, and you got this 37-minute monologue. And, you know, the young actors think if they get themselves a real jazzy costume, everybody will see them there in the crowd. Well, that's true if you're in the crowd for only a few seconds. But let me tell you, if you got three lines and you're wearing a red suit with green tassels on it and you got an enormous plumed hat on the top of your head, nobody hears a word you say. Nobody. For 20 minutes, they're talking about the hat. They don't see this matzo ball under it, you know, at all. Forget it. You just forget it. So any old actor will tell you, when they're passing out the jazzy waistcoats, stay away from the gold ones. Leave that for the guys with no lines, you know. Because the next thing you know, you go downstairs, you know, you walk out to the apron there, you see. You walk out, you're going to deliver your great monologue. And you're wearing this fantastic steel-plumed hat, the one with the big horns. And you get out there and you say, and as I stand here and look out over the great, vast, swirling mountaintops, and as I... And everyone sees the horns going up and down, you know. They're sitting there looking, they're absolutely... And guys keep saying, geez, I wish I had a hat like that. Boy, what? Look at that hat. Hey, how do you think that? Look at that. Look at that. And look at the tassels. Look at that thing. Look at, for crying out loud, look at, he's got a solid bone shoes there. Look at that. With gilded buttons. And your arm, you know. You might as well have not even learned the speech. Forget it. They don't hear you. Forget it. Do you know that I knew a guy who did pretty good with chicks, you know? But he figured one day if he ever got himself an XK-150 Jaguar, it would really make the scene all the way. So he saved for 4.5 years, went into hock right up to his hocks. Yeah, right up to his hocks, you know the scene. Well, he finally popped. He finally got together enough for the down payment. And, of course, it was like 4.5 G's, you know, and he's one of these little guys that are working away there. He goes down, makes the down payment, drives out with his Jaguar, and it was nothing but the Mojave Desert for the next year and a half. Because the minute he would get a chick in the front seat, they'd talk about nothing but the car. She couldn't see this guy for dust. I'm serious, you know, you think I'm talking, no. I mean, you know, and the next, she's, oh, for crying out loud, help. Why, Hubert, this is great. Whoo, look at that. Let me, oh, and she doesn't even know he's there. It's this fantastic Jaguar. Well, finally, one day, it very, very, very dimly dawned on him, and he went down and bought himself a used Mercury station wagon with a bad rear end. And by George, it was harvest time 20 minutes later. Just remember that. Just remember that. A lot of guys figure that if they get the job, if they get that vice presidency, they're going to make it. I know guys that have been upstaged by their rotten job. Yeah. Nobody's looking at old Fred anymore. They're looking at the vice president. Seriously. Believe me, the more stars you get on your shoulder, the less chance you have anywhere. It's the truth, you know. Hey, people are constantly being upstaged by things they don't think they're upstaged by. They think it's going to make it for them. You know, seriously. I know a guy who figured one day if he had this gigantic, if he could ever write a hit play, you know, he would make it in all different directions. Well, now what he's become is a famous playwright. And nobody will come within 30 feet of them, 30, 40 feet of him, except unless they want to ask him a question on how to write a play. He's become a personage now. Nobody talks, you know. All he does is appear on panel shows on Sunday afternoon talking about the state of American drama now. It's terrible. It's terrible. He wants to erase it all, you see. So I got rid of my hat, and you're going to find out, friends, that since I have gotten rid of my hat, I want to tell you one more thing before we leave this terrible subject, that in my closet, I have over 400 pounds of ex-successful rivals hanging on those wire racks. I don't let them out, boy. Let me tell you, I got one suit, Ed, I got one suit that outployed me for one solid summer, and I didn't realize it. I would walk into a place like I want a job. See, I want to, you know, I walk into the place with this fantastic suit. Kind of say, "Hey, where'd you get that suit?" And we talk for 45 minutes about where I got the rotten suit. And he says, "Oh, by the way, it's getting a little late. I've got another appointment." Okay, so I'm in the elevator before I know what happens. All I know is I sold another suit. Another suit, you know. So now you see me, strictly tennis shoes, boy, corduroy nothings I'm wearing, you know. I believe one time I had a tie. I'll tell you this. I had a tie that was making the scene bigger in the village than I ever did. Seriously. So I, you know, forget it, Dan. Forget it. And I'm sure there's a lot of chicks out there all of a sudden thinking, I'm serious. I'm not kidding you. This is a very serious subject. Many people are completely, I know one guy who was completely, completely destroyed as a real operator by the fact that he got hung on buying really expensive paintings. He got four gigantic paintings, which he paid like $1,250 a piece for, and he hangs these up in his place. Forget it. Forget it. It's like living in a museum. I mean, a museum that contains, like, say, the greatest oils this side of the Louvre. Nobody gets fresh in a museum. I mean, you know, with all those gigantic works looking down, for crying out loud. So what the guy has to do, he has two pads now. It's another story, you know. I mean, you know, you just got to be careful. You got to be very careful what you think you're doing. I know many a guy that has killed himself by losing 45 pounds and becoming cute. Oh, yeah. Many a guy makes the scene. He doesn't make the scene. He doesn't realize he's making the scene because he's a big, fat nothing, you know, and nobody takes him seriously, so he can go any direction he wants. The instant he becomes slim and clean-cut with a square jaw, he's got to fall in line with all the rest of them. He's no longer roly-poly Howard, you know, old Howard, you know. You don't take Howard seriously. Oh, I'm very, very serious, you know. A lot of chicks, you know, be careful. Many of you chicks out there figure if you lose weight, you're going to make it even better. Oh, no. Then you're going to have to fall in line with the skinny chicks that are really, you know. You're going to have to measure up with all of them, you know. Like the minute you put on a Yankee suit, you are automatically compared with Mickey Mantle. Automatically. And as long as you keep that suit off your back, nobody says, "Why aren't you in there belting them like Boyer?" That's right. So you can sneak around the back, you know, and do all kinds of stuff that Boyer couldn't get away with, or Mantle. And how? It's the truth, you know. I've known many a guy who has suddenly achieved fame. Figured as soon as he made fame, you know, as soon as he got fame, they would be beating the path to his door. What he found out, that as soon as he got famous, everybody who was there left. And he was, you know, all he got now was fan letters. Which isn't the same, I might point out. It's very different, you know. It's really fan letters really don't, not quite the same as Myrtle. But you'd be surprised how many guys, and so these guys spend their times down at, you know, Third Avenue bars belting it down, see, trying to pretend they ain't that famous guy. That's right! You'd be surprised. Hey, baby! And they look and they say, oh, for crying out loud, look who that is. That's Trilby McGutteridge. Yes, of course. I've said, oh, Mr. McGutteridge, can I have your autograph? Oh, yeah, that isn't what he wants to give him. Oh, yeah, yeah. So the next thing you know, he's writing down autographs. All right, there you are. Give me another scotch. My name is Willie Watson. Oh, no, it ain't. Just thought you ought to know there's a lot of things going everywhere you look, Dad. In extracurricular conk and hospital now. It's very scary. Sometimes it just scares the daylights out of you. Speaking of scariness here, No, just count your riches. Yeah, as you do that. Speaking of counting riches, we have with us tonight the Mandarin House. You know, maybe I better do the commercial, get it out of the way. The Mandarin House. And if you have never tried really fine Mandarin food, drinking down a potato soup and buying a pastrami sandwiches and smoking a cigar and spitting on the floor and, you know, and all the while, yeah, and all the while, this guy, back at the cash register, says, boy, oh, boy, gee, this is fantastic. It's great, and the money is coming in, and everybody's yelling and hollering, and the waiters are singing, you know, and people are lined up, fist fighting, trying to get in. And he figures that if he could only get uptown. Now, if I can, you know, he's got his eye on this fancy joint on East 48th Street, you know, just off Park. Now, then we'll really make it big. And so he finally pops, you know, he puts his $170,000, which he's made from all these spitting, hollering guys, swinging and yelling and buying pastrami sandwiches, and he opens the jazzy joint on 48th Street, and for 5 minutes thereafter, he is happy. And then it begins to dawn on him, they ain't coming in. Everybody's scared now. This fancy joint, you know, and he keeps hollering, hey, fellas, come on in. Oh, come on in. Spit on the floor here. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. That chromium is a little too shiny, you know, and all those people standing around there, and immediately, you know, he has waitresses with fancy little costumes and stuff, and you don't holler, hey, Maggie, for God's sake, oh, slimy here. You know, all of a sudden you're on the east side. Forget it. And then you see this poor guy walking around. A few months later, you see him walking around. He's trying to make the scene. You see him. He's got his little paper stand now way down in the Battery. And he can't figure out what happened to him. Guys are continually being out. I know a guy whose marriage went immediately on the rocks. The minute they got what they had always felt would really make it go. Oh, yeah. They had a thing. No, they really did. This guy and this chick that I knew, and they were really, oh, they were great. They're a wonderful swinging marriage, you know. Oh, it was one of those things. And they lived in about a 3.5-room pad down on 9th Street. And they had this thing figured out that if they could ever one day get this place in the country, you know, a real place, you know, a real place where you can have the things on the backyard, you know, and you can have real rumpuses in the basement, you know, all the whole 9th Street gang down and they can sleep on the roof and the whole bit, you know. Well, let me tell you, they finally got the joint out in the country, and 3 months later, they didn't see, believe it or not, nobody would come near them. And so they themselves, you see, in their own relationship, became so fascinated by the joint, they forgot each other. Oh, yeah. So, the girl is now living in Springfield, Ohio, and the guy's living on East 9th Street. They took a $37,000 drubbing on the joint out in the country. But you are continually being outployed. You know, I think this is what's happening with us in the machine. You know, there was a thousand years ago, it was a great idea. Man always felt, you know, if I could figure some way where I wouldn't have to push this rock, if I could figure some rotten way so I wouldn't have to push the rock. So somebody suggested, you know, I'll tell you, Odd, why don't we take this stick here? And so was the principle of the lever born. Oh, Pope, for crying out loud. Look at that. Old Og pushed it, you know, whoop, he's got a rock the size of the Empire State Building rolling, you know, and he's got a thing, but he's still working it, you see. Then he says, you know, if I could get a thing to push the lever to push the rock. And so was the first bulldozer born. Well, now everybody's sitting around bugged. Nothing but bulldozers all running around the countryside, you know, pushing rocks. And nobody's got anything else to do. So all we do is argue. Yeah, oh, really? I think the very thing you want. Wait till the day arrives when we actually land on the moon. Oy, 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 there's going to be more disillusionment. It's already being prepared for us. Thank whatever stars there are. That they're sending up those probing rockets and the rockets are hollering back, there's nothing, forget it. Because by the time we finally get there, we will be all set for the fact that there's nothing. But can you imagine if 17 guys had gotten into a rocket and had been shot up to Venus and have arrived there and it's 974 degrees in the no shade? It's nothing but one great big ball out of an enormous solar... an enormous, unimaginable solar Roman candle. It's just sitting up there. All we would have heard from that rocket ship is, well, now we know. Forget Venus. Well, we've shot a couple of things up near Mars, and we're beginning to get the message about Mars. Jules Verne didn't say it. You know? That's one time he missed. They figure that there might be two or three varieties of very small mushrooms on Mars. On Mars. Do you know that? So they're... I'm serious. See, it's being prepared. Forget Heinlein, you know. Ray Bradbury, they have these wonderful canals of Mars and these beautiful things all going up there. Oh, so lovely. Forget it. Believe me, the attack of the mushroom people is not going to come. And we're sending more and more probes. So probably we'll finally send probes to all the various planets in our solar system, Pluto, Saturn, all that, and get back the forget it message. Well, as you know, it's becoming quite evident that we're becoming lonelier and lonelier in our solar system. And so we will then begin to send probes out to other solar systems, like 45 light years and away, you know, and we'll send this thing up. And we'll wait years and years and years, because the longer you wait, the more freighted the message becomes, you know. That's a fact. Oh, yeah, when we sent that thing up to Venus, you know, it took months for it to get to Venus, you know. And it finally got there, and it says, forget it! Boop, 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 boop. Well, that's a crummy stage wait to get that kind of a message back. Well, can you imagine how it's going to be when this thing takes, like, 7.5 years? And we keep getting little notes, you know, it says, the rocket is now approaching within 27 light years, 7.5 years now. And finally it gets into the middle of the solar system, and all you hear is one big yelp out of the void. Forget it! Oh, gee whiz. Oh, wowie. So then we set up another $87 million rocket and send it in another direction, trying to make contact with something out there. Well, that's part of the problem of being outploid by the very thing you want. Maybe it would have been better if we had never sent this thing to Venus. I mean, this killed at least 4.5 years of Long John shows, this probe to Venus. It did. Are you listening, John? It really did. It really did, because Venus was one of the favorite fantasy spots of the, you know, the fantasists. Re the planets. As certainly Mars has been. So maybe we should never have gone there, you know? It's like, it's sad to open a Christmas package. Really. Many a guy, I'll tell you, you know, you watch people on the screen, movies, and a lot of you would like to meet Audrey Hepburn or meet Tony Martin. Forget it. Believe me, 10 minutes later, there would be this great sinking sensation. This great sinking thing. You two, all of us, we're all in the same boat. And there are a lot of hippies out there who figure if they could only meet Salinger. I mean, you know, he's just as liable to look right at you and say, get out of my way, will you, kid? Don't bother me. Get off of my back. Seymour, you say your name is? I don't know no Seymour. What are you going to do? Seriously. It's just that way. So maybe Eugene O'Neill was right. Maybe the dream is much greater than the illusion of the reality. In other words, stay out of it. I'm not advocating withdrawal from life. I'm saying, the JAG isn't going to do it for you, man. Right? And it really isn't going to do it for you. And if you think your big play getting to be a big smash success on Broadway, it ain't going to do it either. It really isn't. It. I'm talking about it. Whatever that ineffable it is, it isn't going to do it. Many a guy, we have another mystique in our American society, and that is if you meet the right girl and fall fantastically in love, everything else will take care of itself. It will occur. Oh, yeah, Z? Oh, yeah? You should keep your knees loose so long. As many a guy and many a chick has found out. And then what happens is after they do find somebody, they figure, well, I'll tell you, it was because I found the wrong one. The dream is never defeated. And so we get this message back from Mars that says, forget it! We say, that was a bad rocket. A very bad rocket. We'll have to send another one. And so the rocket hollers back from Venus, oh, there's nothing! Oh, that rocket. We got a better rocket. We got to design a better rocket, an optimistic rocket. A positive thinking rocket. Well, let's put it...